You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM. Broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, the third floor of the Cub. Support for KZUU comes from Brews Books, located on 235 East Main. Brews Books buys, sells, and trades hardbacks and paperbacks. Brews Books also has a variety of sheet music and holds literature classes. Today in the studio with me, I have Tom Forbes of the Pelusistics website. Is that how you say it?
Pelusitics.
Pelusitics. Sort of like politics.
Exactly.
Okay. And we're going to be talking about the most recent election we just had. We're going to talk a little bit about Walmart. I had Christopher Lupke from PARD on last week talking about just what PARD is all about and the Walmart idea coming to Pullman. We're going to talk about that, but we're also going to...
There's really not a whole lot of blogs out there, I don't think, especially of a political nature. And I know there's probably quite a few students on campus that maybe have some personal blogs, but you know, it's something I think students are probably a lot more familiar with than the adults in the community. But you know, basically a blog is an abbreviation for weblog, which is just kind of a way of saying that it's an online diary. You know, basically it's a place you can go and post your rants or you know whatever you want to talk about. The internet gives everyone a forum now to speak their piece on just about anything they want to. I guess there's probably blogs on just about any kind of topic you can think of in the world now. So, but a political blog, they're definitely growing. You know, there's spots on CNN now that talk about the blogosphere's reaction. The blogosphere is just kind of a term that refers to the greater universe of political bloggers out there, both left-wing and right-wing. And on the left, a guy who's really gained a lot of national notoriety is David Goldstein, who runs a blog called horsesass.org. And you can tell by the title, he definitely is, he kind of shoots from the hip and, you know, tells it like it is. And in fact, in the recent King County executive race, he broke a story about Republican candidate David Irons and some family troubles that he had that raised a lot of controversy given the nature of the topics. You know, it's like the guy hit his mom and you know his mom took a lie detector test. So political blogs by their nature can tend to be pretty controversial. And on my blog, I do make a point of kind of telling it like it is and speaking how I feel. And some people like it and some people don't. So.
Okay, so do you have much hate mail from your blog?
In the Daily News recently, there's been a few letters from people.
Ideas and beliefs on that, but what was interesting is that in the heyday of that site, I don't know where people found it all the time, but I had an online submission for your comments on it, and I was getting for a while there several a day. Mm-hmm. From people mostly disagreeing.
Yes.
With everything I had to say.
Yes.
They thought I was evil. I was a monster for
yes.
thinking such horrible things.
Yes.
How could I, you know, look myself in the mirror? You know, what does my mother think about
right.
me? It was crazy. I mean, it was just like, it's just my opinion on something. Is it that big of a deal?
Right.
Obviously it is to you, but, so I had actually, you know, the funny thing is the site's still up. I don't think the, email part of it, the online submission form, I don't think that actually works anymore. And I actually haven't updated those in well, gosh, 8 or 9 years. So it's sort of interesting to look back at the site because, you know, Bob Dole stuff is still up there.
And yeah.
The thing is, there's a few times where I'll get a day or two behind, so I'm having to do 2 or 3 entries. And the thing is, when you look at a lot of blogs out there, you know, people, an entry for them for a day might be a paragraph, maybe 2 paragraphs.
Right.
For me, a typical entry is almost a full page.
Yes.
You know, so for me, it takes a long time to do an entry. And, you know, if I do have to do 2 or 3 of them in a day to try to go through and say everything, because a personal blog, which is, I do that only for me. I mean, it's out there for people to read if they want to, but
right.
It's mainly, it's what I did that day, things that I enjoyed. It's mainly so I could look back in 10, 15, 20 years and remember what I did on a certain day, or remember the specifics of an event that was important to my life at
yes.
that time.
And yes.
That kind of thing. And the politics is more or less a place for me to rant.
Right.
And, you know, I'll rant in my personal blog, too, but the politics one I actually opened up relatively recently, and I actually went through my I went through my personal blog, and I actually found all my pumps in, put their gas pumps in. When they put their gas pumps in, their prices were about 5 to 6 cents cheaper than every place in town.
Yes.
Plus, you got the discount on top of it, so you're
yes.
getting 10 to 12 cents less.
Exactly.
Now, Safeway's base price and every other base price in Pullman is identical.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think that just proves, you know, that the free market works. Competition, I've said all along, you know, talking about political beliefs, I'm a real free enterprise, free market, laissez-faire school of economics guy. I think that the market should have as little governmental interference as possible, because I think that, you know, customers do a lot to regulate the market. Now, I wrote a letter to the editor in the Daily News about 3 weeks ago, and you know, basically stating that fact, and I've been excoriated in some letters to the editor since then, you know, where people, you know, I think one letter writer last week said that, you know, sort of took it to its natural conclusion and said, well, I assume that Mr. Forbes would oppose child pornography, crap, I go to parts of the state. You know, I go over to Seattle quite often, and sometimes I'm shocked to see the price over there even be cheaper than it is here, you know, here in Pullman. Certainly down in the Clarkston-Lewiston area, it's much cheaper, you know, than it's here on the Palouse. And, you know, and there's been talk about, you know, is there a monopoly? You know, does it one company that provides gas to Pullman and Moscow? And you know, there's been rumors of it for years. I guess there really isn't a monopoly, but, you know, there certainly is. You know, the gas stations look around at each other and they see what they're charging, and mm-hmm. you know, they all there may not be collusion, but you know, they all know, you know, kind of what the price is. They know what the market will bear, and I think they all kind of, you know, get into that. And you know, so I think, like I said, ultimately it certainly helps the consumer, and competition is good for the business too. You know, a lot of times businesses don't like competition and they fear it, but ultimately it is good for them because it forces them to do things that they normally might not do. And in the end, when they improve them,
that up big competition happened, and Safeway broke that up big time.
Right. No, and I think it's great that they did that, and like I said, that's a great demonstration of the benefits of having competition.
And I've decided already personally that I'll be going, when I'm in Pullman, I will be going to Safeway for a while to buy gas. Even now that Safeway is, say, $2.45 a gallon,
sure,
and Tesoro and Conoco and all the other gas stations are $2.45 a gallon for the cheap stuff, yeah, you get the 3 to 6 cent discount at Safeway. But I'm going to go to Safeway just out of principle, by the simple fact that I've been overpaying for gas for so many years at those other gas stations.
Yes.
I'm going to give Safeway my business for a while because they actually came in and did something about the problem.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to definitely go to them. And you were talking about competition. You're talking about things being legal and whatnot. And that brings me to smoking ban.
Yes.
We just voted... Initiative 901 passed overwhelmingly. I think it was 62 to 37.
I'm home. They're smoking. It's not like they're violating any laws, but you know, it was tough on us. And so, yeah, I'm certainly not a big fan of smoking or tobacco companies or anything like that. But I think on 901, it really fell down to me on a kind of a property rights.
Thank you. That's
issue.
Exactly what I was.
You know, because this 901 even covered like private clubs, and I thought that was going, you know, just a bit too far. You know, I guess they say there's only about 20% of Americans, you know, smoke now, and that's down significantly from what it was 20 or 30 years ago. But, you know, those people still have rights, too. We can't, you know, disenfranchise, you know, or marginalize the 20% of people who do smoke. And if there is going to be a bar or a private club or something like that, you know, where, you know, the owner wants to allow smoking, because, you know, let's face it, for some reason, smoking and drinking tend to to go well with each other. So, you know, I mean, I think most people realize if you go in a bar, whether you're a smoker or not, you're going to be inhaling a certain amount of nicotine when you go into a bar. And I mean, I think that's kind of school and things like that. Big issue in the schools about in high schools and things like that. There've been school boards that have voted to remove the pot machines from the schools because they feel like it leads to childhood obesity and juvenile diabetes and things like that. You know, I won't address when it comes to children. I mean, that might be a different issue. But certainly with adults, I don't want the government making choices for me through legislation, you know, what I can eat or what I can drink or what I can do with my body.
Wearing a seatbelt or helmet.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like once you're an adult, I think, you know, you should have a certain amount of, you know, individual freedom. And, I really don't think it's, you know, there's enough information out there. I think that, you know, maybe 50 years ago, you know, we didn't know about the bad effects of, you know, cigarettes, and there certainly wasn't maybe an emphasis on eating healthy. But, you know, now there's really no way to avoid it. You see it on television. You know, the kids learn it in schools about good nutrition and good health habits. And so I think now that that's absolutely.
And that is where I have a problem. And to me, 901 was about property rights.
Absolutely.
And that's why I didn't say specifically what my issue was until you said it. And,
mm-hmm.
and obviously, in this situation, we do agree
yes.
on what 901 was really about.
Yes.
And it wasn't. And I don't know if you looked at the statistics on the amount of money spent. The American Heart Association or Cancer Society, one of the groups out there, gave $1.5 million to support this initiative, and they were fighting against the no on 901 people who had $27,000.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It was they were just so outspent. It wasn't
yes.
even funny.
Right.
And the problem was that it was sold so much as a health issue, health issue, health issue. Nobody stopped to think about the political ramifications of saying, as a private property owner, you can't do X on your property anymore.
Exactly.
And that's sort of a frustrating thing, because I said, okay, yeah, smoking now. There's a lot of people that don't like smoking, so they're not going to say anything. But what happens when it's something that you care about?
Yeah, it'll be some. I mean, after they completely eradicate
home prohibition, but you know, with the dangers of drinking outside of your home and the need for you to drive, blah blah blah. Maybe it's safer only to do it in your home,
right?
And nowhere else,
right?
You know, it's that kind of mentality. And I mean, you get enough people who are going to jump on some sort of bandwagon, you're going to pass stuff like 901 that just passed.
Yes.
Now, rewinding back to your nanny state comment,
mm-hmm.
We'll get back into some of the other initiatives here in a little bit, but the nanny state idea. Now, that is something that I've noticed has been going on for a long time. I mean, the seatbelt laws are a great example of that.
Yes.
Forcing you to wear a seatbelt in your car, and the seatbelt that you're wearing is not going to save anybody else's life. The only life it will save, if any, is yours.
Right.
And so you have the state telling you that you have to not wear a seatbelt. And my neighbor said, what if not wearing a seatbelt was my way of seeking thrills? Like some people, bungee congressmen, on to these people. That they'll get the right ears of the right congressman, and it will work its way up. And it's essentially, I guess what I'm getting at is people are more or less, and I'm not saying all people, a small group of people are forcing the government to make the changes in the laws.
Yes. Oh, I agree. I'm a real strict constructionist of the Constitution. And, I don't think the government that we have now is what the Founding Fathers had envisioned. I really don't think the Founding Fathers envisioned the government getting involved in the day-to-day life of its citizens the way that they are now.
No, I think they'd be rolling right now in their graves, or I bet they are.
Yeah, the federal government touches every person in the United States in their daily life every day, and I think that's just wrong. And we've come to accept it as just being routine. So
right, and you know, and then the way the federal government in many ways will do that is that they'll force their wishes on the states, which then force
routine these days.
Oh, very, very, very true. And the nanny state thing, I just, it's frustrating with the idea of It's frustrating, the idea of having to wear seatbelts. It's frustrating for all that kind of stuff. But one thing that I found was really interesting was back in last year, there was a guy who went to school at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. He had a 4.0 grade average, 21 years old. He had five majors. He had economics, history, sociology, psychology, and political science as his majors. And he also wrote for the school newspaper.
Yes.
And he wrote an article saying that seatbelt laws should not be enforced, that they're a bad idea, that it's it should not be the duty of the government to knew the consequences of not doing so. And, you know, so it's a very interesting story that this guy actually wrote an article about not wearing seatbelts, and then a few months later,
yes,
he actually dies by it. But we're going to jump over to a little bit of Reverend. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more on the initiatives. Our website, www.thepes.com. Okay, we were just talking a little bit about the nanny state idea, and we were talking about how the federal government seems to be overstepping their bounds all the time. And here is one where the Supreme Court, I think, made the worst decision on the face of the earth. I could be wrong. Maybe that's a little bit of hyperbole, but let's see what your thoughts are. The Supreme Court made a ruling that private property could be taken by an individual or corporation in order to use it for taxing purposes that would be helpful to the locality. And the reason why I say that's bad is because part of the Fifth Amendment says, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use. Not you can't call it ownership anymore. So what were your thoughts on that decision when it came down? What do you think about the idea that it's actually more of a stewardship than a true ownership anymore?
Well, I agree. I think the Kelo decision was just horrible. I think it really scared a lot of conservatives and libertarians in the United States, and I think it was a real wake-up call that, you know, something had to be done to change the Supreme Court. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why there has been such controversy, where there was such controversy over Harriet Meyer's appointment by President Bush, and why she was ultimately forced to retract her nomination. It's not so much abortion, I'm sure that's part of it, but I think conservatives really want to make sure that, you know, whatever person that gets put on the court is going to be someone who is a strict constructionist of the Constitution, as you mentioned about the Fifth Amendment, and not primary impetus for people coming to America so they could actually own their land and not have to, you know, live at anyone else's generosity, and they could make their own way. And I think, you know, this obviously was driven by, you know, by business interests and tax interests. But the scary thing is I see a lot of the same thing of this eminent domain type thing, only kind of on the left environmentalist side. And I think a great example of that is the policy that they have in King County now, with rural homeowners there, about how they can use their land. You know,
it's, right, the critical area ordinance.
Yeah, the CAO is almost the same kind of thing, only kind of on a flip side of things. It's not necessarily for business. You know, a business is not going to come in and build on your land, but it's you can't develop. You know, if you wanted to put anything on your land, you know, with the CAO, there's all these regulations, and you have to keep X amount in green space and things like that.
I believe that X amount is like six. Mm-hmm. You can just grow over. You no longer can mow your lawn. No
right.
more tilling your garden.
Mm-hmm.
You got to just let your property grow over for green space. And I think they would then maybe understand a little bit of what other people are going through with their property that they own.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, I don't know where it's going to stop. You know, I think that's one of the critical battles right now that you can see. You know, coming out ahead in American politics, you know, is this issue of how does the government control what you do with your property? One of the things that I'm extremely concerned about is the whole idea of the buzzword that's very popular these days. It's called smart growth. And I always put quotation marks around smart growth. Smart growth.
Yeah.
Or another big buzzword is sustainable development. I've seen sustainable development defined as green Marxism, and I totally agree with that because, you know, that's what it is. Basically, smart growth and sustainable development are back to dense housing in the city center. They call it backfill. They want people to move back into downtown areas. You know, basically, they want everyone to live like they do in downtown Seattle and Portland, live in condos, and then take public transportation to work every day and just get rid of, you know, get rid of combustible engine, and then I guess the rest of the country would be just turned into wilderness, because I think, you know, that's what a lot of people want. They want to return it back, you know, to its wilderness condition, and you know, it's just crazy. You know, ideas like that are crazy. They've tried to implement things like that in King County for years. You know, we've had the monorail, which, mm-hmm. you know, thank God that's finally died. Hopefully it won't be like a zombie and resurrect itself. Hopefully they put the stake through its heart for good. But the monorail and Sound Transit and a lot of these other ideas, and you know, the government may want to legislate people to get on public transportation. They may try to encourage it, and there's been a lot of talk that the...
Sent by us.
Correct.
And when was the last time you've seen a half-cent increase in gas? That's truly a 10-cent increase in
exactly.
gas, not a 9.5.
Of course.
So don't get tricked by that. Now, here's the thing. The government, first, they have the vote on the 5-cent gas tax increase a couple years ago.
Yes.
The citizens said, no, we're not going to have it. So then the government said, yeah, we are, and we're going to just vote it in anyway. So then they got their 5-cent increase a couple years ago to do some road projects. And then all of a sudden they're like, no, now we need even more. Now we're going to do another 9.5 cents. So really it's been 14.5 cents, or in reality 15 cents, that will be over the last couple years ago through the next few years, for, you know, a 15-cent increase in taxes over a 10-year span for what they say road improvements and stuff. But the problem is that not all that money is getting used directly on roads.
Right.
They're going to use it for mass transportation. They're going to be using it for the arts and a few other things that they have to do.
You know, after Times today, you know, it's like, oh, now the truth comes out, you know, after all this talk about the viaduct. Well, anything we see from the gas tax is going to be a long time coming, because we don't have the money to work on the viaduct and we don't have the money to fix that 520.
Right. The gas tax was
like, okay, great.
The gas tax was just a small percentage of what it was going to cost to fix those two items.
So it's basically, we have an unfunded mandate. So now, before they can do any construction on the viaduct or 520, they have to turn around. They've got to figure out how they're going to, you know, they said, we're going to try to do this locally. We're going to try to maybe, you know, impose a special levy or tax in King County. But they haven't talked to King County about it. There's no time frame yet. You know, all of these issues that the proponents of 912 were talking about months ago, you know, they were hooted down because, oh, that's, you know, it's an emergency. The viaduct could collapse at any time. And, you know, and I love the extra touch of drama, how they staged a big emergency drill. I was over in Seattle when they were doing that one weekend. They closed the viaduct, and they had, like, a drill of, like, you know, what would happen if there was an earthquake and half of the ambulance. Just incrementalist point of view, that if you build more roads, then it'll just encourage that many more people to drive on them, and there'll be that many more cars. You know, I think, you know, their whole standpoint is like, if we let's have a lot of congestion.
You know, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah, and, you know, if we have a lot of congestion, then by gosh, people will, you know, have to ride the bus. But they haven't. You know, people still sit there in traffic, and so I think it's just kind of a failed policy. And again, I don't mind paying the money if it's going to be spent on the right things. But I'm just not seeing that. And and then also, too, you know, I felt resentful just from the standpoint of Eastern Washington, because, you know, I was quite disappointed to see. The last time I looked at it this morning, and the last numbers were, I think, 912 was passing in Whitman County, but just by a very slim margin, like maybe less than 100 votes. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, the Seattle Times, I guess, had the original numbers that had come in and actually had, you know, Whitman County in the against 912 category.
How much minute now? You know, the bridge is ready to sink, and the viaduct is going to collapse any minute now. And, you know, I said to a lot of people, I said, okay, if the viaduct is in such bad shape, if it is that dangerous, why do they not shut it down right now?
Oh, yeah. Close it. Close it immediately.
If it's that dangerous, why don't they shut it down right now? The 520 bridge is going to sink tomorrow. Why don't they shut it down right now? And the thing about the 520 bridge that is the most maddening, okay, you're going to replace the bridge. It's a long bridge. It's a big bridge. You got to replace it. Why are you going to replace it with exactly what's there right now, another two-laner? You already know that 520 has some of the worst traffic in the state on it during rush hour.
Right.
Make it a four-lane bridge in each direction. Why are you going to pay all that money to replace it with exactly what's currently there?
Yeah, there just doesn't seem to be a lot of thought given to these things. And yeah, like I said, it's just real frustrating, because it seemed like every resource of the government was going to be used to make sure that 912 didn't pass, despite what the will of the people was. They were going to, roll out every solution. I'm very frustrated at the fact that there are no toll roads anywhere in Western Washington. I'm incredulous to that. I grew up on the East Coast. I'm from Virginia, and you can't driving from Washington D.C. to New York City. I can't even tell you how much money that would. It would be, it's a fair chunk of change with all the toll roads that you go on, and I don't know why they don't implement a toll system on the viaduct. I don't know why they don't implement a toll system on the bridge. And I'm not talking about the system, where you have to go up to the toll booth and, there's some old guy working there and you got to throw him a quarter and the technology exists now to, where they can do it electronically. There's gateways that you drive under and you have a transponder in your car and then it takes it out of an account that you have, and so people that are regular commuters could get those, and so that there'd be a special maybe lane, one gate for people who didn't have those, but the rest of the people who live there could get them, and it wouldn't add on to the traffic and
numbers though. So the but more or less, if you look at the numbers though, King County swung that election,
sure,
as they do with a lot of elections.
Yeah,
we have in Washington.
True, yes.
It just happens that way. You have a lot of people in Seattle mainly, and then a lot of the outlying areas around Seattle, they carried this to defeat. The majority of the state did not want it. Seattle did, as far as county wise. The majority of the counties did not want it. A couple counties did, and they're the biggest counties, so they got their way. The rest of us are going to be paying a lot of money towards a new 520 bridge, which I hope will be a four-laner. I hope they don't go back to a two-lane bridge, because that is just almost pointless. That's not going to help traffic. Ron Sims had a commercial on the other day when I was over there, where he was obviously going for King County Executive. He was standing on a bridge over the Snoqualmie River, a footbridge, with his wife, and he said that if you vote for me, well, he more or less made it sound like David Iron.
They could out in Seattle. That's not going to happen. But they could. They could out in far eastern King County, out towards North Bend. I think that's probably where they talked about putting this 605. And I think that would be a great idea. I mean, ultimately, it's the federal government that would put that in. It's not. It's not up to Ron Sims to decide that. I mean, I'm sure the county could try to fight it, but I agree. Given the political environment that's in Seattle, I don't think we'll ever see anything like that. And it's just unfortunate because nothing's ever going to change with the commuters over there. I mean, I just foresee years and years and years and years more of mm-hmm. fist pounding congestion, which I used to do. I used to make the commute from Kent to Kirkland every day and back.
Oh,
and
man.
That was 167
and 405.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Two of the best.
Yeah. I was sitting in the S curves every morning. So.
Oh, geez.
Wondering what am I doing?
So. Yes. So you talked about fear mongering. Chris Gregoire, right after the rock slide happens, gets on and says, if people vote,
and especially convenient the fact that there were several thousand dads over here at WSU that had to go back to Seattle that day and had to make their tortuous way back through White Pass and Stevens Pass, and then the horror stories that got, it's like, without Snoqualmie Pass, look how bad it would be, and we've told you in Eastern Washington that, you're dependent on our roads over here. And yeah, I'm with you. I would stop short of accusing them of actually creating a landslide, but I think they overreacted, I think, to the landslide by keeping it, closed the way that it was. And I'm sure they would defend it by saying, well, we had fatalities earlier in the year. We were acting out of an overabundance of caution. But, I don't know. It's just one of those things where, you just scratch your head and go, that was my immediate reaction. It's like, oh, gosh, right before the election, there's going to be, 10,000 or more dads over WSU that are going home. And I don't know how many people changed their vote because they had to drive through
exactly.
Stevens Pass to get home on Sunday.
I
don't deny that there are probably some products that we get here in Whitman County that come through the Port of Seattle, but I don't think there's very many. And it's probably the Port of Portland, with things coming up through Tri-Cities into Spokane, I think is probably the you know, most of our goods get shipped to market, you know, through the southern route rather than through the mountains. So,
okay. So, like I said, you touched on something I want to talk about here in a minute.
Okay.
And that's going to be the dams on the Snake River and what Seattle's trying to do to get rid of those dams. Plus, let's then transition to Pullman-oriented things.
Excellent.
Right after the break. This is the PES on KZU 90.7 FM and the favorite, the Reverend. CUU. You're listening to KZUU 90.7 FM. This is the PES broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, the third floor of the Cub. Reach us on the telephone at 509-335-2207, on our website at www.thepes.com, or on the station's website, www.kzu.org. In the studio, I have Tom Forbes. We've been talking all about state politics, and now we're going to get more into local politics, and stay tuned for more.
Winter wheat, largest wheat producing areas in the world, and especially in winter wheat. So it would not only have an impact on the Washington economy, significant impact, it would also have an impact on the countries around the world that rely on our wheat and import our wheat. And, you know, it's hard to believe with the talk about, you know, the economy and jobs and things like that, and then hunger around the world and things like that, that we would sacrifice all that for the sake of some fish. I mean, I'm not for eradicating salmon, but, you know, I think you got to think about people first, and you got to think about wildlife second. And something like this, I think, clearly is against the interest of you know, thousands, if not millions, of people. Whitman County would be devastated outside of Pullman. You know, all the farmers around here would probably close up shop and retire, and then, you know, it would just lead to complete economic devastation in eastern Washington. And frankly, I can't even running over that pollutes the environment. You know, this is just power that's generated by water running over or through a dam. And, you know, again, that's something that's a good thing. You look at the dam, it's like there's lots of good things about all of these dams. And I agree, there are probably some dams in some places that maybe are unnecessary, and perhaps, you know, they should be breached because, you know, this country, you know, back in the early 1900s and all the way probably up through the 50s was kind of on a dam building spree, and that was kind of like the big thing to do, was, you know, is to build dams. But some, you know, are necessary. I don't think anyone would ever seriously consider recommending that Grand Coulee Dam be breached, for example, because all of eastern Washington would be devastated. You know, before Grand Coulee Dam came around, all of the area that the students drive through now from Vantage over to Pullman was a desert. You know, all of the fields now that you pass that are full of, you know, onions and beans and corn and, you know, generally born and raised, these types of issues. I was born in Virginia, born and raised in Virginia, and there's a big split in Virginia between southern Virginia, which is mostly rural and conservative, and northern Virginia now, which is the suburbs of Washington, D.C., that are much more affluent and tend to be liberal. California the same way, northern California, you know, like I said, north of Redding and kind of up in the Mount Shasta area, and, you know, maybe they could conglomerate with eastern Oregon and eastern Washington and, you know, form like some big state. You know, I've heard like Cascadia booted around or Jefferson, you know, since you got a state of Washington, name one for Jefferson because, you know, that's another president. And, you know, personally, I think it would be fantastic. You know, I mean, we would suffer a hit, of course. I mean, no doubt about it. Seattle is the economic engine that drives the state. But I think we'd be fine on our own. I think we could, in time, we could, you know, find our own way. But it's just a dream. You know, something like that would require, you know, the Congress to vote on it. There would be all kinds of, you know, laws that would have to be enacted for it to hit, whether we, you know, whether we like it or not. But, you know, at this point, I really don't see, you know, another alternative. And I think Eastern Washington just has to try to do something to make sure that its political interests are better represented over in Olympia.
Very true. So we've talked statewide issues. We've talked a little bit about the federal government. Now let's talk specifically about Pullman and Whitman County.
Sure.
And there's this, as everybody has probably heard, if anybody reads the Evergreen or the Daily News or has even been listening to the news, they've heard of this organization that's been around for a while now called PARD, the Pullman Alliance for Responsible Development. And recently, a new organization called the Business and Residents, Businesses and Residents for Economic Opportunity, BREO. It's a grassroots organization that supports free enterprise, business growth, and healthy competition in the city of Pullman, Whitman County, Washington. Their website is www.letsgrowpullman.com. What do you know?
To my blog, you know, that the opinions that I express on Pelusitics are my own opinions, or the opinions that other people express are their own opinions and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of an entire organization. Just as someone who would be a member of PARD may have a particular opinion, and their opinion that they express may not represent the membership of that organization as a whole either. So we formed BREO because we wanted to. PARD has really dominated the landscape since they were formed in January. They've gotten a lot of coverage. They've had a lot of stories in the Daily News. They've had a lot of stories in the Evergreen. You know, they've been on television. They've been on radio. They've had press conferences. So they've really gotten a lot of coverage. And so, you know, we felt it was necessary to the people here in town that support growth to form kind of not an opposing voice to PARD, but just a group where we could say what we wanted, you know, what we felt about growth town, and again with that. But when you have a group only like PARD in town and it gets a lot of news coverage, it may send out the message that Pullman is not a friendly place to do business, that we are an anti-growth town, or that anyone who is considering opening in Pullman might encounter difficulties or protests or things like that. So One of the biggest reasons that we formed BREO was just to let other people know, and it's not even strictly related to Walmart, but just to let other businesses looking at Pullman know that, yeah, you know, we have people in the community that have certain beliefs, but then there are other people in the community that have these beliefs also, you know, that believe in growth and development, and that that's a good thing.
Okay, so the you got PARD, and really, whenever you see PARD, for a long time, it was specifically about the Walmart issue. And I guess you could say some critics of PARD believe that once this Walmart issue settled one way or the other, the PARD would go away. And PARD is saying, no, we're not going away. If you look at the site, when there's a more friendly environment with a lower minimum wage, lower sales tax, and a lot of other businesses where people already, it's a destination. Moscow, Idaho is a destination for people to go shopping. And Pullman's not. People bypass Pullman to go to Moscow, to go shopping, to hit the mall, to go to Staples and Office Depot and the Walmart they have over there. So if I'm a business owner and I'm like, well, gosh, you know, a lot of people are already coming over here. If I build a building here, they're going to come over to my building too. People bypass Pullman all the time to go to Moscow. People from Pullman go to Moscow. It hurts the city of Pullman. It hurts our tax base when most of our money is actually being shifted to Moscow, Idaho.
Yes.
Now, PARD has said something that I think makes a lot of sense. And I'm curious what your thoughts are. And specifically what they were talking about was, let's not always play, well, Moscow has it, we need it too.
The problem, let's try not to have everything that Moscow has, but the problem is one of demographics that Pullman is really struggling with. And, you know, when you look at the demographics of Pullman, the median household income in Pullman is a little over $20,000, and that's because, you know, let's face it, 70% of the population are students. So we have a very low average household income compared to the rest of Washington. And then when you start looking at other factors like the median age, I think the median age in Pullman is 22.5. You know, you look at the proportions of families, you know, people that live in households with families, and a lot of the demographics that a big box store like Target look at, you know, they looked at Pullman, and, you know, it's like, yeah, gosh, you know, that really doesn't, you know, that doesn't fit our mold. Because I've done some research on Target and what their demographics are, and Target's demographics, you know, Target is a more upscale big box store. That's made an effort to target small rural communities. That's kind of what Walmart focuses on. They focus on smaller communities that have less median household income, and so Walmart is willing to take a chance on Pullman that other big box stores may not be willing to take. And the fact that Walmart is the biggest corporation in the world, they can afford to to take that chance. I mean, I really don't think Walmart would open in Pullman if they haven't done a lot of economic studies to realize that the business is here and that they can make a go of it. So I think in some markets like Pullman, Walmart has to be the first to go in. And then once Walmart comes, then the other stores will come as well. So I think it is inevitable that if Walmart is allowed to come into Pullman, that we will see some other big box stores and we'll see some other retail that is different than what we have in Moscow. But I think Walmart has to be the first. They're the ones that have to come to construction. You know, in my mind, Walmart should have started construction a few months ago. But of course, we have this process, and then it is legal as part of the city code, and part is exercising their legal rights and holding up the process. So yes, it will be a question of if Walmart is allowed, because there's going to be a hearing examiner will hear Pard's appeals, and then if they don't like what he has to say, then they have another round of appeals beyond that they can exercise. So it could take a while before this finally happens. So
if you've read on the Pard website and you've read their report that they've put together, and I've actually taken time to do said items, it seems to me that Pard has a kitchen sink defense approach to Walmart.
Absolutely.
They're not arguing it on a point. They're arguing it on everything they can think of,
yes,
hoping that something sticks with it, each individual, and they'll get enough individuals sticking on different things. For instance,
in town,
for them to go.
Sure, football weekends and dad's weekend, you get all the RVs in town. Boy, that's going to be, great for those guys to have a place, rather than trying to jam in here on campus, to have a place that they can go and park for free overnight, for these activities. And that's absolutely absurd. And the Pullman Police Department has no concerns whatsoever. I've talked to the Pullman Police Department, and you're right. They totally dismiss it as just being a ludicrous idea, and they have no concerns whatsoever with any kind of increased crime rates.
Well, you know what Pard is basing that idea that there will be increased crime in Pullman? There's a Walmart down in Utah that is in a small, say, 3,000, 2,000 population, and there's a large city, like a 70,000, 80,000 population city nearby, and a lot of people from there are coming to this Walmart, and they're dealing drugs, they're doing drugs, they're doing all these things. So you have this one Walmart in Utah that's having these problems.
That much objectively, there's been a lot of partisan type studies that are trying to prove a particular point that have been done. It was interesting, last week Walmart actually had a conference in Washington, D.C. where they had commissioned a group called Global Insight to do like an economic impact study of the entire United States, of like the impact that Walmart has. And these were very distinguished economists, and they presented some papers, and not all of what they presented was exactly flattering to Walmart. This wasn't like a total Walmart cheering session. But for the most part, the things that they said about Walmart were positive, and certainly debunked a lot of the myths that have been spread about Walmart, and many of the same myths that are being perpetuated by Pard.
So then you have the idea of the Walmart going in here, and one of the things that they had said that they've contradicted themselves on their website and what is being said in the against Walmart. Now TV Reed's coming out saying that people are going to be against Walmart now because they're finding out they want to put a super Walmart over in Pullman. So it's or a Moscow, excuse me. So in one breath they're saying, hey, it's going to shut down one in Moscow because they're not going to want to have two really close. Now they're saying they're going to put two up really close to each other, and it's one of those things where it's like they're saying things out of both sides of their mouth.
Well, that's really been the problem with Pard all along, and obviously I'm very closely connected to it, so I often try to talk to people who are neutral, just kind of as a sounding board, just to see how the different arguments are resonating. And I've talked to many people in the community who really don't care about Walmart one way or the other, but a lot of Pard's arguments are are ridiculous, like the parking lot, you know, and the crime thing, and then the illogic, like you just mentioned. And this is just one, you know, one example of where, you know, a lot of their arguments are totally illogical and are circular in a way, like you said. And I think what that shows is the problem with Pard is, and you mentioned with the kitchen sink, Pullman is being, you know, I'm sure T.V. Reed was trying to make the point about Moscow that, you know, somehow Pullman is being, you know, he was trying to portray it's like, oh, we've been betrayed that they're going to build one in Moscow.
Right.
It's like, hello, there's already one in Moscow. How can we be betrayed? You know, and his thing is, his point was that, Moscow shoppers won't come over to Pullman to shop, which has been the argument of Walmart supporters. It's like, that's never been it. We have never made that argument. Argument has always been to keep Pullman.
Exactly. Keep them in Pullman.
So,
don't send them to Moscow.
It's painful and amusing at the same time to, you know, to watch their arguments.
Sure.
And like I said, I understand where they're coming from. They have a right to express their opinion, but, you know, I think it's also my duty to debunk a lot of what they're saying, and that's what I've tried to do both, you know, in the paper and on my website, you know, to say that, hey, what you're saying, you know, is not logical, or it's just not true, or, you know, and here's the opposing viewpoint, and I hope at some point...
And on paragraph saying, we support all businesses, big and small, including Walmart. And before that, he had a little bit of a longer one in supporting Walmart.
Well... You know, if anyone knows Ed Schweitzer, they know that, you know, Ed is very conservative. He actually gave a talk here on campus a couple weeks ago, talking about corporate welfare. You know, Ed is very much a laissez-faire economics guy. He is really against how governments give inducements to businesses. You know, how the governments will, you know, to draw in businesses, they'll give, like,
sure,
know, tax breaks or
like for the movie theater.
Yeah,
they've reduced taxes.
Yeah, like special incentives or tax breaks. Ed is a strictly free market guy. He thinks that's terrible. He thinks that, you know, let the market rule, let competition do what it's going to do, and the government should not, you know, be in the business of encouraging one particular, you know, business over another. So it seems a bit illogical to most people that Pard would try to curry the favor of Ed Schweitzer, because he's the
side where they're saying minimum wage jobs.
Right.
We are not currently, and so you got one side where they're saying if Walmart comes in, all the other businesses in Pullman will close down, and there will be all this unemployment, and you know, you only have one place to go. And I guess what I'm thinking is, let's say all the businesses did close down in Pullman, and the only business open in the whole entire town is Walmart. You got all these people, all these students who are currently working at all these other businesses that are currently not getting all sorts of money from the city government for health and welfare and all this kind of stuff, that will go over and work at Walmart. Then all of a sudden we're supposed to believe that a ton of money is going to come out of the city coffers,
right,
for health and welfare that's currently not coming out for somebody who works at Cougar Country,
exactly,
or Conoco or whatever. So the thing is, you look at the kind of people who are going to be working at Walmart, and they're not the type that are going to be on the they're not the ones who have a family of five that are trying to support them working at $7.16 or whatever minimum,
right,
wage is this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really bad argument.
Our students, the demographics of Pullman, 75% of the population are students. The median age is 22 and a half. You know, the students here don't require the living wage that is always talked about, because they don't have a family of four and they don't need to buy a house. They're just looking for some way to make money, you know, while they're here in school. And
mm-hmm.
and they don't care about benefits, because students are, you know, are covered through the university. They have medical benefits available to them. So, you know, so that's the Pullman situation. But it's interesting, overall, I mentioned the Global Insight study that came out last week. There was a paper that was done about that, because that's an argument that's used throughout the country with regards to Walmart increasing, you know, driving people into social services. And there was a study that was done that actually debunked that and said that Walmart had no effect on food stamps or aid to families with dependent children. There was some slight increase in Medicaid to Pullman. Only 0.85 of that goes to Pullman, and then 0.15 goes to Whitman County. So 1 cent stays locally. The other 6.6 cents goes over to Olympia. And then, so even if everyone that worked at Walmart was on welfare, which they wouldn't be for the reasons you've mentioned, but even if they were, the city would still realize the tax benefits, you know, from Walmart, because the city does not fund social services. You know, that's not in the scope of the Pullman's government to provide, you know, food stamps and welfare and things like that. So, yeah, it's interesting. Speaking of benefits to Pullman, there's going to be, I guess, an economic study that's going to be coming out very shortly. I don't have the exact numbers yet, but there's been a study that was commissioned by Walmart of exactly, you know, what is Pullman going to see out of this in dollars. And the early estimates are about $500,000 a year in sales tax revenue, probably about $350,000 in property tax.
People that need apartments being built, the more people that are coming to Pullman, you're going to have more people that need places to shop, places to eat, places to do stuff.
Absolutely.
We're going to see growth in Pullman, and Walmart's just one of the many steps along the way. And it's my goal one of these days that Pullman is not in such a pinch for taxes, and Whitman County, too.
Yes.
Whitman County's hurting.
Well, and they will benefit from this as
Whitman
well.
Whitman County will definitely benefit. I mean, we see, go over to the mall, go over to Walmart, go over to Staples and Office Depot and all those places, and look at all the Washington license plates from over there. And think about all those people. If even half of those people were spending that money here in Pullman or somewhere in Whitman County along the 195 corridor, think about all that tax money just there alone that Washington will realize.
Well, and you can see it over and over and over again. I just recently had a series on my blog called 8 Days of Truth, and every day I went to a different town and reported news stories about, you know, Walmart supercenters that had recently opened, and these were all small towns. And these weren't press releases. We were talking about earlier about, you know, the King County CAO. It's like, you know, environmentalists and, you know, greenies and people like that, they don't want to see people hopping in their minivans and driving down to the strip mall. You know, they'd rather see that dense urban housing and little trendy shops downtown and things like that. And the problem is, that's not what most people want. People with families, you know, want strip malls. That's why they keep building places like Walmart and strip malls, is because that's what people want. You know, I mean, they wouldn't build them if people didn't want to go there and shop. So,
you know, I didn't even touch on this, and, you know, we are running out of time big time, and I think we could go on for a lot longer.
Sure.
Let me just quickly say, support for KCUU comes from Brews Books, located on 235 East Main Street. Brews Books buys, sells, and trades hardbacks and paperbacks. Brews Books also has a variety of sheet music and holds literature classes. This is KCUU 90.7 FM. You're listening to the PES. And I'm with Tom Forbes in the studio. We've been talking most recently about PARD, about Walmart, about growth here in Pullman, and
it isn't, and
not what the population wants.
No, it isn't. And you know, and there's a place for downtown. You know, there is a place for downtown, and there's a place for Walmart. And I think that's where a lot of the opponents like PARD just don't get it. You know, that it doesn't have to be either or. There can be both, and both can flourish and harmonize with each other. Many, many, many of the members of Brio are downtown merchants. They want Walmart to come in. They're not afraid of Walmart. People don't realize that whatever impacts that Walmart would have on downtown Pullman has already absorbed those impacts when the Palouse Mall went in some 30 years ago. There's no more damage that can be done to downtown than hasn't been done already, and in particular when Walmart opened in Moscow. Those downtown merchants want the opportunity, at least, to keep the Pullman shoppers in Pullman, to have them driving by their stores instead of driving on the Moscow-Pullman Highway over to Moscow. That's why they're in support of Walmart. You know, it has to be within the downtown area. Now go find them. You can't, because there isn't any place to shop like that downtown.
Well, Kent Stationery is still downtown, is it? Or I'm trying to remember if that was displaced when Corner Drug burnt.
Yeah, I don't think there's a Ken Stationery. So I guess you could buy sneakers at the Goodwill store. I hadn't thought about that. But I was kind of talking about new sneakers.
Right.
So, yeah, it's, you know, downtown certainly has its place. You know, it's great. It's entertaining. It's a great place to take a date on the weekend. You can go walk around. You can, like, you know, maybe catch a movie at the Audion. You can go to Basilio's. You can grab a cup of coffee at the Daily Grind. And that's great, and there's a place for that. But to ever see downtown as to generate the type of retail tax dollars that we need to meet the services of a growing city, that's just not practical. You know, those, like you said, those days are long gone.
Right, and you know the interesting thing about downtown, a lot of people compared it. You know, they look at downtown Moscow, they look at where like the Friendship Square is and stuff. They see a lot of pedestrian traffic,
and another
is really stuck geographically.
We are. And another thing that's different from Moscow, too, in their downtown area is you know, our streets through downtown are load-bearing streets. You know, most of, you know, some of the areas they're talking about in Moscow are places where there's not a lot of, you know, traffic. You know, right. they're one-way streets and they're dead ends and things. And, you know, people forget that Main Street and Paradise
are 195 or 270.
Yeah, they're 270. And, you know, I've looked at the numbers. They carry about over 15,000 trips a day. So, I mean, that's a major highway, you know, so you have to be very careful about, you know, any kind of monkeying around that you do with the traffic situation.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's just, again, it's, you have to look at every town is different. And, yeah, Moscow has a great downtown, but we have our downtown, and it's unique to Pullman, and I think it has a place, and it's great, but it's not enough. You know, we need more, and that's why the city chose Bishop as our area to grow, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Not one thing wrong with it. And, you know, and actually, I just realized something. I kept saying the 195 corridor, 195 corridor.
Exactly. Honestly, you know, Rite Aid, you know, Safeway, Shopko, Dismore's, all these are national chain stores. You know, you couldn't buy a gallon of milk in Pullman without shopping at some kind of a chain store. You know,
right. Even Dismore's is actually Tidyman's.
Yes, Tidyman's, which is out of Spokane. They have stores all over the Northwest. So there's no, you know, it's a myth. It sounds good. It's something maybe, like you said, you throw up against the wall and see if it sticks, but it isn't true. And frankly, that's the truth. I've heard from people. We're tired of all the little local restaurants. We want Red Robin. We want all these different stores. That's what, again, you know, for ideological reasons, you may have a distaste for corporate America, or you may have a distaste for national chain stores that make every town look like every other town in America, but that's what the consumers want.
Yeah, and you know, in all honesty, as far as local restaurants go, I love Cougar Country. I'll say that right now.
I do too.
I go there all the time. That's probably my favorite restaurant in town.
I love it.
It's on the north side of town. That's where I go most often. You know, it's a great place, and I think there's one place, and
just like everyone, Reggie Lee admit in a couple of years that his business has improved, just like everyone else's has because of Walmart. I mean, he may lose out on his underwear and sock sales, but I can't imagine that's a big profit center for him anyway. So, in fact, a study came out not too long ago that said only 34% of Walmart shoppers even purchase clothing at Walmart. So, you know, they're not going to close, you know, people down. I mean, I personally don't buy clothing at Walmart. I mean, it's not that I don't want to. It's just it's a choice that I make, and I mean, it's probably good for other people that they have the opportunity to do so, but there's room for a lot of different people in the market.
And one thing, you know, they talk about Walmart having a grocery store, and it's going to really hurt Safeway. And
it probably will, and justifiably so, for the reasons we talked about at the top of the program.
Right. And you know, what's interesting, though, is how many people currently, and I know a lot of people from Whitman County, from Pullman, who make trips to Winco Foods over in Moscow all the time because it's cheaper food, lower sales tax.
The Evergreen had a story 2 weeks ago, I think, tomorrow, about, did not have
Cougar football.
Perfect.
Were you at any of the games this year?
No, I did not have a chance to make it to the, I have a small daughter, and so we've had a hard time making it to games the last, I have a 2-year-old, so the last 2 years we haven't been able to get a season pass just because of her.
Sure. Okay, but I'm sure you've been at least hearing about what's going on, or
I
watching them on TV.
Religiously watch or listen on the radio to every game.
Okay, now, one of the most curious coaching moves that Doba's made this year that a lot of people have totally disagreed with, which is funny. It's one of those things, like, you're in the stadium, and say you're 4th and inches, you know, around the 50-yard line, where it's bad if you don't make it, and all the fans are like, go, go! And so the coach goes for it, and then when it fails, he's like, why did you go for it? It's like, oh!
Right.
But, okay, now, let me set up a situation for those who don't know. WSU is down by 3 points. We're late in the game. We're at the time, right around the 5-yard line. It's 4th down. We go for a field goal. We had, it was 8-4, which means the ball's not going to go quite as deep on the kickoff. So ASU is going to have good field position to start out their drive, and they have 3 minutes. So they have plenty of time to get down. And all they need is a field goal because we have it tied. All they need is a field goal to possibly win the game. If we get a touchdown and the extra point, now we have 4 points. They have to get a touchdown. So that puts that much more pressure on them. And up to this point of the game, not a lot's really, I mean, the Cougars' defense have let up 500-plus yards on the ground through the air to Arizona State. So it's not like the defense was going to go out there and magically get a stop right after that and get us the ball back to allow us another opportunity. So here you got this penalty. Do you take it or let it go?
Oh, I don't disagree with Thoba's decision. I think given the Cougs have had a really bad history of overtime. If the game was going to go to overtime, I think our chances were not good. I think that was one of the things in Thoba's mind. And the defense, I don't think has been able to make a stop really off that. So, you know, like I said, I would maybe go on with a sneak or some other kind of play like that. So to get that yard.
That would have been interesting if they did just for the play anyway, throw Swagger in there.
Yeah.
What the Arizona State defense would have been thinking? Ah, geez, they got the big quarterback in. They're probably
right.
going to do a sneak.
Yeah, and then maybe
you throw it off to Harrison.
Yeah.
That even you know that would be great actually. Throw Braidwood back as running back.
Yeah, get him thinking a run. Yeah, and then maybe you like put Cody Boyd in and like have him go and let's like do a chuck, you know, into the corner of the end zone. You know,
yeah.
do a fake run and do a chuck. I the sweep I don't think was maybe the right play. You know, down that close
sure.
like that where they're you know in close and looking for the run. So.
Yeah, and I think I personally like coaches who go for the win and not go for the tie.
Sure.
I like the coaches who are aggressive.
Sure.
And sometimes it doesn't work out for you.
No.
But I don't like this whole let's play it safe, let's you know go to overtime, let's do this, let's do that. It's like, no, let's win the game and walk out of there winners right then. You know, and
that's what Pete Carroll did in the Notre Dame game.
Yeah.
Luckily, he didn't have to be second-guessed, but boy, he would have done that. In fact, I was down in Tucson at the game that they lost down there in overtime to Arizona. That was a heartbreaker. But yeah, so I think that was probably on his mind is like, you know, the Cougs are not, you know, we're not, especially this year, not a real physically dominating team. You know, if you're a team where you know you're going to get a stop, you know, going to overtime and you think, okay, we're going to hold them to a field goal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if we were the, you know, the team that could do that. So I think going for the win was probably the right idea. So
very cool. Well, I appreciate the time that I've had with you today.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It was a lot of fun. And,
yes.
And from what I see so far, I think we pretty much agree.
I think so.
Stuff.
That's good.
And I've been reading your blog now for a little while, ever since I learned about it. Which is about a week ago and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. So I've been reading the whole the 8 days
yes.
that you did and all the different cities that you've been profiling and all the other things you've been saying. So it's really interesting to read the blog and have like the political viewpoint on the Palouse that, you know, really there wasn't a lot of.
Sure.
Like you said, I mean...